Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Okay, so we got to put our lipstick on.
Okay.
Now we'll blow each other a kiss. Thank you. Awesome. You're so sweet. So do you remember when you were a little girl and the Avon lady would come and she had those little tubes of lipstick? She was the best ever. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I would be there with my dolls, baby. We had the biggest red lipstick. Those were so fun. Those little
samples. I missed out on that because my mom was super, super religious and she wouldn't even let them leave anything. So, you know.
So what? So I guess maybe in that doctrine, it was believed that, you know, you had all that red lipstick on. You was kind of a vamp. You was doing too much.
Oh yeah, it was a sin.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a sin.
Wow. How was it like growing up in that kind of discipline?
Well, it's all I knew, but it was very. It had me in a box, and I'm not the in the box kind of person. So it gave me a lot of trouble. I believe, well, you believe what you were taught and,
right.
But it was very claustrophobic.
Were you an only child or do you have other siblings?
Yes, I have two sisters. It's three girls.
So were you all kind of conformists or were you all rebellious?
We were conformists. Two of us were rebellious. One was totally conformist.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, we're conforming right here on the edge. We just jumped right in this with a kiss, brains. Hello. We are on the edge with Ezenezer Lene. Did I say it wrong? Ezenezer? How do you pronounce your name? Wait a minute. We're going to have to do that again. Wait.
Wait a minute. That's a first for me. I know my name is crazy, but... Ezenezer Lane.
What did I do? Okay.
Ezenezer Lane.
Wait. Say it again.
Ezenezer Lane.
Okay, wait a minute. Ezenezer. All right.
They call me Lady E if that makes it easier for you.
Well, wait, after I make the introduction. Okay, here we go. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. This is the spot, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, the responses are never dull, and the hosts get the name wrong. Brains, I am here with Ezenezer Lane. Did I say it wrong? Ezenezer.
Yes. Ezenezer.
Ezenezer.
Yes.
Ezenezer Lane.
Yes.
That's just brains. Okay. I've never heard the name before. Where did the name Ezenezer come from?
I am the only one in the world, for real.
See? That's why I'm all tripped up. And you know, I grew up dyslexic. Well, yeah. Really? So again, this, I had to spell it out my way phonetically, brains. I'm not going to show it to you, but. Ezenezer. So where did they get the name from?
My father named me after his sister, who was the person that really, really looked out for him. I don't know exactly where my grandparents got the name from, but when I looked it up and tried to find anything, the closest thing I could find was the priest in the Bible, Eleazar, and the place, Ebenezer. And they both have like meaning, and that's what my essence energy is. And it means, Eleazar means the Lord, my helper, and Ebenezer, the place is rock of help or stone of help.
Wow.
And that's who I am.
Well, thank you. Eneezer. Lady E. What do they call you, Lady E?
Yes, they call me Lady E.
Okay, well, Lady E it is, okay? But no, I love that. That's beautiful when people are able to create symbolism in everything they do. I'm like that. You know, you will go into my space or into my home, and everything has a symbolic meaning, and people that know me can pick it up right away. It's a vibe. It's an energy. So, okay, so you was there, and you was kind of, you know, I can't say constricted, conformed. I can't make any judgment call. I don't know what it was. It's hard raising three split tails. Well, you know, just keeping it real.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your mother did the best she could with what she had. She tried to teach you, you know, wrong from right. But the religion can trip you up.
Yeah.
Because it is a form of mind control. I don't care what you say, brains. It can be any religion doctrine. I'm not going to call out none because y'all be getting mad. But, you know, really. And who am I to say? Nobody knows until the deal is done and you dead. God comes to each one of us very individualized. How he come to Lady E is not how he's coming to April. Okay? It's two different set of circumstances. So the discipline there. And people get disciplined confused with spirituality. Break it down for us,
Lady. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You're really hitting on something. The discipline was, like I said, very constricting, very, very controlled, very controlled. The only thing we were able to do, we went to school, we went to church, and we came home. There were no extracurricular activities except for in church, and the main extracurricular activity, which I say it's the only sin that was okay, and that was gluttony.
You can eat up everything. You can eat up everything.
It didn't, yes, and it didn't help that, like, my mother is a woman from Mississippi, born and raised there. They were farmers. She only got a 10th grade education. She didn't go any further than that because they had to go in the field.
They had to work.
They had to chop cotton and get those bales of cotton. They raised what they ate. And I mean plant food as well as the cows and the pigs, and they shared with the neighbors and all of that.
And they didn't even get all of that. They got the pigs' feet.
Yes.
You got the pigs' intestines.
Yeah.
Chitlins. Heads. Oh, wait a minute. Let me tell you something about some crazy cooking. Somebody told me, one of my guests, my mother was not feeling, you know, well during her transition. She said, boil some chicken feet. Girl, that was some of the stankiest stuff I have ever smelt in my life. Now, I thought a chitlin was bad. And then they swole up like little hands. I said, I can't feed this to my mama. I can't feed this to my mama. No matter how sick she is, I can't get this to her. And they gave us the scraps, just any old thing. My father won't eat pork to this day. You know, because a pig will eat anything. But I say that, and look at us. We are still the chosen ones.
Yes, we are.
We have been through all of that. The stripes on our back, you know, being the wet nurse for white women, being the concubine for their husband, we done been through it. And God has carried us through, brains.
Yes, he has.
You better get a hold of something, hallelujah. You know, somebody's tethered line up above, if it's spirituality, if it's through, you know, a God. But know that there's something higher and greater than yourself that you need to ascend to and be humble to. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. Wholeheartedly, yes, absolutely. It's essential to get to know who you are. And a lot of things we do the things we do based on what we were taught, and we don't even think, we don't even explore and ask ourselves, why do I do this, or where did I get this thought from, or why do I have this perspective? And we're not willing to be uncomfortable to figure it out.
Right.
So that we can be the best that we can be, and so that we can rise above the fray. And so we continue the cycle. We continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And
stop. When did you say this is enough? I'm not repeating the cycle because, again, I tell people all the time, it's some epigenetics. Your grandmama's mama's trauma. Yeah. You know, you dealing with all that. When did you just say enough's enough?
When I was in a really bad place in my life, after most of my life being clinically depressed for my entire adult life, and finding myself in a situation where I was, I had to make a decision to leave. I call him X-Man. when I had to make a decision and walk away from something, and I never thought I would do it. And I remember saying to God and saying, God, somebody has lied to me. Something is wrong with this picture. The light just started coming on, and it was like, this is not working. This is not working. And I began to ask a lot of questions and pay attention. And I've been going on this journey since then, you know,
and you just had an epiphany. Just one day, it's just bip, bam, boom.
Yeah.
It happens like that.
Because we just keep going. We do the same things over and over. Mm. First of all, it's comfortable.
Right.
Even if it's uncomfortable, we're comfortable in our discomfort.
Of course.
It's all we know. And we don't understand that when we see somebody who has been liberated or someone who is free of that mentality, wow, we don't understand that they had to go through a process, right, or they never were taught what you were taught. Mm. You know, and so it's one of those things. It's like, you know what? Something is wrong with this picture.
Right. So you got to paint a new one on a brand, yes, new canvas. And that's, yes, what you did. But you've mirrored something. I don't know if people know this, but you know, you're the wife of a very successful mortician.
Yes.
And there's life and there's death.
Oh my.
Now I'm going to ask you a creepy question. Do he be telling you that the bodies be talking to them? The girl, no, the spirits? No, really? They just quiet.
I've been in the morgue. I've never heard it talk. I never seen one sit up on the gurney.
Or one that was really wasn't dead. They thought he was dead. Oh my God. Well, let me tell you, I got another dear friend, and their parents were very affluent morticians in the African-American community. And they say them celebrities would come through there, and, you know, they would embalm people. And just, she said the energy is just way, way different. And I can imagine that. I can imagine that in a metaphysical way. And with you being a spiritual woman, it just seems like, you know, things would channel through you.
You know, it is... It can be daunting, and it's not scary, but it's weird. Going in the morgue and seeing people who are no longer living. And I've always been a person before I met him, before I knew his name, I always had a special interest in death. Not that I was, I didn't. How does somebody not breathe?
Mm.
You understand what I mean? I was always intrigued with forensic science and even autopsy. Dr. Michael Biden would come on the TV, and anytime I knew the forensic science, Dr. Michael Biden would be on there. I would look at it as long as it was on because it was so intriguing. You know, there is a different feeling in the room,
but I can't, a different feeling.
I can't explain it.
I know. I can imagine it's in there.
Yeah.
So I have a friend that also does forensics for the two people. One does forensic cleanup, and then the other one takes the bodies to the morgue. Mm-hmm. And it's like they are still able to communicate those energy. If you are tapped into that source, they say you can't. It's undeniable. You can't separate from it. And it is fascinating. You know, but okay, so now you got the burial business and you got the cremation, because cremation's on the rise. Number one, I say there should be legislation that when you put a body in the ground, you are purchasing a piece of real estate, and that should be a tax write-off. I'm just saying. Because you are. And people don't do that. Morticians, you know, that's a guarantee. That's a guarantee because we're all going to go at one point or another. But people are picking so many different options for their funerals. You know, it can be expensive. And you can never determine how you want to leave or intern your loved one. You know, you want to do the very best that you can. But cremation is pretty popular now. Do you guys cremate as well?
Yeah, we have people that come and they opt for cremation. But we don't get as many.
Really? Girl,
we don't get as many.
Everybody's getting cremated here in California. Well, number one, ain't nowhere else to put them. Probably stacked like five high. We're going to be like New Orleans. We're going to be burying them on top of ground now. But really, they're really getting, I'm going out that way. I am. And I did my mother, like I want to be done. I want my ashes spread around many places. I want to be many places. But it's a thing, a mental thing about cremation and also religion. People have a problem with that, but then other religions find it honorable. What do you run across?
Actually, I know a doctor here who is from India. That's how they, you know, that's what they do. I mean, we in America, it's usually the burial, you know, or, you know, going to the mausoleum, going in a drawer. But for me personally, if I don't want to go to hell, I certainly don't want to burn, even though I can't feel it.
Really?
That's just me. No, I don't want to.
Really?
No.
I say burn, baby, burn.
I want a fire to burn within me in a whole different level.
Oh, Lord, I don't want the maggots and the bugs eating me and looking. You know, I've seen how they dug up bodies for forensics afterwards and ew, no, just let me just blow in the wind. Let me roll. Let me go. Let me go. And it is different. And you honor that. People are doing a lot of celebration of lives, you know, especially in the Black community. I talked to some of my Jewish friends and they're very stoic. They're very stoic. You know, they have a ritual and you don't break from that, you know, but us, it used to be where, do you remember, and I know you've been in the business a long time, boy, you'd be at the funeral and folks would be falling all out. They'd be screaming and hollering, wanting to get all up in the casket with the body. And Bobby, I loved you, Bobby. And now people are just sitting there, you know, as if they smoke a cigarette. They're comfortable with the process of the transition. Sharing that with children too. You know, opening up a casket and letting them, one of my girlfriends, I had two experiences. One of my girlfriends said, oh no, I can't let the baby go because, you know, that's just, I just told her that that's grandpa, he's sleeping. Now the child is afraid to go to sleep, thinking that they're going to be in this box. Then my other friend, we're in the car and we go past the cemetery and her little girl said, you know, my grandmother's over there. So that's where her body is. But her soul went to heaven because she had to be with God. She said, they just put her bones and stuff there. Let's wave to her. And I was like, what different perspective of two different people and life.
Right.
And
yes.
Crazy. So you've taken all of this and I know you don't put it to the words of a song. You are a artist. Tell us a little bit about your music.
Oh my goodness. Well, I was born with the gift of song. I was born with a voice. I've never had a voice lesson. I've never had training other than in high school being in the chorus. It's just been a natural gift. I come from a musical family. My father was an awesome singer, tenor, reminiscent of Nat King Cole. He was a crooner. And he was a skilled guitarist. So growing up in church, you know, you had to be in the choir. So it started with me from being in the Sunshine Band, or no, we called it the Sunbeam Choir, the Sunbeam Chorus. And so I sang in the Sunbeam Chorus. I sang my first solo at 7 years old. And the name of the song was Lord, Do Something For Me. But it wasn't until I was 12 that my voice really, really came alive. And I remember we were in the choir. I was able to, at that point, be a part of the young adult choir. You couldn't get in the young adult choir until you were 12. And so I got in young adult choir. And of course, my sister sang. My mother's a very strong alto. And I got in that choir and Aretha Franklin with the Southern California Community Choir, James Cleveland. Mm-hmm. They did that album. And one of the songs on the album was Climbing Higher Mountains, Trying to Get Home. And they chose me to lead the song.
Oh my God.
And I led that song, and I remember one Sunday singing that song, and that was the first time that I can remember where I felt the anointing of God on my voice.
Oh, wow.
It scared me. Yeah, it really, really scared me. It scared me. And I later understood what that was. That was the Spirit of God that just totally took over my voice, and I sang that song, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I did that,
what? You know.
But from there, I just loved music. I came from a musical family. My sisters and I, we had a little group called the Blissett Sisters, and soprano, alto, tenor. My father would not.
Yeah, y'all wasn't up there do bopping and widdly whopping like everybody else in the 60s. You was singing some good Christian songs.
Yeah, I mean, flat footed. It wasn't a whole lot of moves. You know, like people do the choreography. We flat footed sang. I grew up without the aid of a lot of music. We were able to, we had pitch pipes. Mm. And we would get the pitch pipe. We knew what key the song was in, and we'd blow F, and everybody would just fall in and sing. So that was my formal training.
You also play the guitar, though, too, don't you?
Yeah. Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't play the guitar. No.
Oh.
I don't play an instrument. My instrument is my voice. However, my ear is impeccable. So when I write music, I write the words, and I hear the music in my head, and I sing it to whoever the musician is, and I know if it's the right chord. I can pick things out, but I am not a fluent keyboard player or musician.
Well, you are very talented. So tell us really about your work in mental health.
I am the founder of Imagery International. I don't usually say it's my work in mental health, but it really is. It really is. I'm not trained in that way. However, I really do bring home women being whole, being healed, becoming who they were meant to be, and walking in their purpose and living up to their potential and not taking the potential to the grave with them, because they have work to do. And so my tool is, well, my organization is Imagery International Movement. We're changing the name to Imagery International Movement as we speak, because I want us to be a movement for the masses, for women, because women are the glue that keep it together. And just like I was a good mother, I was a good wife, but I could have been better if I knew who I was.
Well, it had been suppressed for so long, and you get it when you get it. That's what I said. You know what? And we blessed to get it, because some folks ain't going to never get it.
Right.
And they're not going to get it a lot of times because they don't want it. Mm-hmm. They're living this imposter syndrome, and that's very easy. Mm-hmm. Disguise and suppress who you are. Then you look in the mirror one day and realize that, you know, I've been living a lie. You know, and you know, you take your eyelashes off, your wig off, wipe off the lipstick, and your true authentic self really shows up.
Yeah.
And until you can deal with that and face that, fat, wrinkles, rolls, cuts, scars, bruises.
Yes.
Then, you know, you still gonna keep on with the same old nonsense. You'll never evolve. Right. Now, am I telling them right, sister?
You are so on point. Absolutely. I wrote a thing about I am, I see. Mm. And it was about what I see when I look in the mirror. When I look in the mirror without the makeup, without the foundation and the blush and, you know, the mascara or the lashes or the the made up eyebrows and everything.
I know, because they go thin, right? Whether you believe it or not, as you age, your eyebrows.
everything, you know, and the first line I said was, I see skin untaught. A-U-N-T-A-U-T, meaning my skin is beginning to, you know, think gravity is taking place. Things are falling. Even from here, if I do this, you know, if your skin, you got more give in your skin. So my skin is untaught. Okay. But does that make me less than who I am? Can I accept myself for who God made me without any embellishments? Does what he made need to be perfected? You know, we do that because we want to look a certain way. We, you know, that's on us. But when I can look in the mirror and behold what I see and behold the beauty of what God made, I'm good, and have the confidence to know that it's not just my skin and the outer parts of me, the surface part of me, but deep down inside of me, who am I? Mm-hmm. What am I here for? Mm. What do I want? It's not so much who people say you are, because you show forth who you are and they will say who you are. The sad part is some people know who you are better than you know yourself.
What? They can see it all over your face, brains.
Yes.
Oh, yes. My God. You are just a wealth of information. I've enjoyed this conversation and interview with you so much. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, books, CDs, concerts, maybe just a good conversation and a virtual spiritual hug. How can they get in contact?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because actually one of the services, I have three things. I have Imagery International is a women's empowerment movement, and we are a catalyst to women to be who they were born to be. And that's imagerymovement.org. And then I have my business, my coaching and speaking business, Defy Limits. And my tagline is rock your moxie. You better be.
That's right.
You better rock your moxie. And because people are really, really people are seeking for more, but they don't know what it is. And so I help coach people through that process. And that's at eneazer.com. That's eneazer.com. And they can schedule an appointment with me so we can talk if they want, whatever it is they want, whether they want me to come and speak to their women's group or just help people with this mindset thing, because the mind is a terrible thing to waste. Okay.
I know.
And mental illness begins with a sound mind with a lot of people. Mm. People weren't born mentally ill. Mm. But when the vicissitudes of life start coming.
Vicissitudes. I gotta look that up. I gotta put that in my lexicon. Say that again. Vicissitudes.
Vicissitudes.
I love big $25 words. I had to figure out how to use that in a sentence. Okay, continue.
Yeah, when the tests and the trials and the traumas and the pain and the grief and all of that come into our lives, and it really upsets us and gets us off balance and finds us in a place that we don't even know ourselves. We don't recognize ourselves as we have come to know ourselves. Some people just need to have a 1-hour conversation. I offer that.
Or a kick in their tail. You offer that too.
Yeah, I offer that too.
See? Sometimes you got to kick them in the boot to get it right.
Yes. But I do it in love. Okay. I do it in love.
Yeah.
But they can schedule an appointment for our 1-hour chat. It's not free, but what are you worth?
What life lesson is free? Okay.
There you go.
You're gonna pay one way or another.
One way or another.
And if I have to pay with dollars, instead of heartbreak or blood, sweat, or tears, let me write you a check, okay?
You're right. What is it worth to you?
And what is it worth to you?
It's not a lot of money.
It's a cost for information.
That's right. That's right.
And people don't get it. That's your blessing.
That's right.
You know, it's like promoting people for free. I do what I can, but sister got to eat too.
Right.
You pour it all in other people's way.
And this is the thing. I pay for what I'm able to share with you.
Okay.
But I didn't pay with money. You know, I can relate to being lost. I can relate to being stuck. I can relate to not knowing who I am. I can relate to having absolutely zero self-esteem. Mm. I can relate to working from my core, being who God called me to be, and not realizing it. Until late in my life, you know, so I don't have a lot of time to waste. I don't have a lot of time to lose, but whoever I pour into, it's got to be worth something to them.
Right. Right. It's got to be a return on the investment.
There you go.
That's what stockbrokers say. It's your ROI. Right.
There you go. Yes.
So what is it? Is it emotional intelligence? Are you building your relationship capital? Or are you still stuck on stupid?
There you go. You know?
Okay.
And some people, it's not stuck on stupid. They just don't know. Or they don't know that they know.
Right.
They know.
Sometimes, you know why I say stuck on stupid? Because sometimes people are at a point where they don't even care.
Yeah.
And I still want you to care.
Right.
Your situation is not going to be perfect. Nobody's situation is perfect. Life is not perfect. Mm-hmm. Ebbs and flows.
Yes.
It's a roller coaster.
Absolutely.
You better fasten your seatbelt, baby, and get ready for a ride because you're here on the edge and we ain't playing. We just saying. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being here on the edge. I love you so much. Come back and visit me again. You've just been
absolutely.
All right?
Likewise. Okay, right. Thank you for having me.
Say bye to the brains.
Bye, brains.